state what I see as a significant problem and try to explain it a little bit in a way that wasn't previously clear to me, at least. Unfortunately, in the attempt to try to be clever, I chose a title that's not particularly clear, but hopefully by the end of the talk, you'll understand what I mean by this, the superposition of quantum controversy, ongoing debate over what aspects of quantum mechanics are actually controversial. And so I'm going to talk about what I see as a real problem faced by the standard model of quantum mechanics. And some of the examples that I'm going to give a couple examples that were really the motivation for me preparing this talk, and talk about where I see some real consensus emerging on this topic, where I see there's still debate, and then where I see debate about the debate. And as I go through this, I don't want to give the impression that I am an expert in this field, but I have to deal with it. I teach quantum mechanics classes. I have to work with it. And in fact, in my researches, I've become convinced that no one's an expert in this field because it's too vast and broad. There's too many aspects of it. So there are experts in certain areas of quantum field theory or in certain aspects of experimental quantum mechanics, but there's probably no one person who understands all the ins and outs, as you'll see as we go through this. I will have to add in some technicalities here and there, especially in the interest of time, but I welcome any questions afterwards about what those technicalities mean, whether I can answer them or not. We'll see. Now, first of all, that doesn't work the way I want it to. We'll just go with it. The problem that, as it's often stated in quantum mechanics, is that it's often stated we don't completely understand quantum mechanics. We know how to, and I've actually heard this at the conference here, we know how to use quantum mechanics. There's no disagreement on practical issues of how it works, but we don't know how to interpret it. And there's book after book and paper after paper that's kind of been written that states this is the general state of affairs. My argument is that this is too simplistic and fails to really state an underlying problem. Again, now, oftentimes when people who talk about this, if you get them talking long enough, eventually they come to what I'm calling the real problem. And that is that we can't fully agree on what it is we don't understand. And so we can try to have this very simplistic delineation of practical issues, computational stuff, oh, we all agree on that, interpretation, lots of disagreement. But there is significant disagreement about the epistemological limits of what we know and what we don't know about the theory itself. More specifically, I think, we can't agree on how to talk or even think about quantum mechanics, and that's a practical problem. That's not just some theoretical worldview philosophical thing out there that those who do theoretical physics can argue about, but the rest of us don't have to worry about. If we can't agree about how to talk about quantum mechanics, especially for, this is important for me because I have to teach it, then that's a practical problem. So it brings us to my first example, and again, I apologize, slides aren't coming up quite the way I wanted them to, but we'll see, you know, each computer is a little different, but we'll work with this. There was a study done by by Mike Dubson at the University of Colorado at Boulder, and it really came out of an attempt by the faculty there to upgrade their quantum mechanics classes and to revamp some things in their program. And this is not a small school. It's over 30,000 students, a pretty sizable physics and engineering program that they have going on there, both undergraduate and graduate level. And they were looking at this study primarily at some of the undergraduate classes, I think, upper level undergraduate courses. But they were asked some specific questions, and I've just pulled out a few of them. And I found this kind of fascinating because I was looking at the same time of how to maybe upgrade my class that I teach at Trevecca Nazarene University in Nashville, a rather small school. But I had to teach the same material. And so I was thinking about, should I teach using axioms or postulates? And so they were asking the same question, and they found not only was there disagreement, as you can see in the graph there, between the faculty that they asked about this, but they would get responses like, these postulates are necessary and critical, and then they would get other responses that would say they're useless and dishonest. Okay, now in teaching the wave function, should we teach wave function collapse? You see a bit of disagreement there. Most of them saying yes, but some saying no, and some wanting to say no. And so this, like this other quote kind of sums up the perspective that was common there. This can't really be right, but we have to adopt this view because it works. Okay, now this is one that I think is also very important. Does this wave function that we talk about in quantum mechanics, does it represent information or a matter wave? Is this something that's just giving us information, or does this represent something about matter itself? And you see quite a variance of opinions on this. And so here's some responses. We should ascribe physical meaning to the wave function, or alternatively, someone else wrote, the matter wave view is wrong. And someone else wrote, I don't care. So we see a variety of opinions there. So when I go to teach this to my students, should I just throw them all out? It could be kind of confusing, if you might imagine, to someone trying to learn this system for the first time. And so I contacted Mike Dubson and asked him, because this work had been done a few years ago, and I asked him, so what was the final result of all this? What, and have you done any follow-up work? Because I'm really curious about this. And he said, no, our efforts to transform our upper division quantum mechanics have stalled because we can't get consensus on what to teach. So that's a practical problem. Now, you may think that argue it's a practical problem that just stems from an inability to interpret quantum mechanics properly and not from any of the calculational aspects of it. Well, and that may be true, but it's still a practical problem. The next example I want to look at is one from a series. Some of you may have seen the series of articles over several years, exchanges through the American Journal of Physics, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and I just found it fascinating. It kept going on and on and on and on, and so. As far as I could trace it back, the start of this back and forth came through a paper by Nikolic, who wrote had a very catchy title for a paper saying, would Bohr be born if Bohm were born before Born? Okay, you kind of have to see it. I should have put it up on the slide because the spelling is kind of important in the title because he's talking about Born, the person is, and but the whole argument, the upshot, is just a clever way of asking the question: would the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum mechanics be as dominant as it is today if history played out a little bit differently? If the Bohm interpretation, which was a more deterministic or kind of a hidden variable type, he talked about the hidden variable formulation and whether that would have become the dominant view if that had come around before the Copenhagen interpretation. Well, as a response to that, there was something published by Van Kampen where he said that this was a scandalous situation in quantum mechanics where we have these debates about how to interpret. And he said, quantum mechanics provides a complete and adequate description of observed physical phenomena on the atomic scale. What else can one wish for? And he goes on to state the caveat that we haven't included gravity yet. But his argument is that we really don't need to even talk about this. Well, Art Hobson came in with his comment that quantum theory is a complete and adequate description of phenomena. The fundamental constituents of the universe are fields, basically no questions asked. That we really don't have any question about that. Henry, let's see, I'm trying to remember his affiliation. He was with University of Arkansas. No, I'm sorry, that was Art Hobson. I have at the end of this talk all of the different citations. But another physicist voiced an opinion that the wave function is merely an intellectual tool, and the real scandal is to insist that there's any underlying stuff at all, that these fields that Hobson talked about are not really matter fields at all. Then Hobson came back with, well, there is no interpretation needed. Yes, these fields are real. There's plenty of evidence for a scientific consensus that there are no bounded particles, only unbounded fields. Then Dave Bianchi came back. Another scholar came back with an opinion saying the quantum fields are not really spatial fields. The quantum field is a field of potentialities. Nuremberg then jumped in and said there's plenty of observational evidence that localized bounded particles exist. Then Hobson jumped back in and said, you're both wrong. Then Sciamanda said there are no particles or fields. It's just a calculational model. It has little to do with ontological reality. Hobson said, unless we're going to abandon realism, then the Schrodinger wave function must represent a real matter field. Then finally, one of the best, most insightful to me publications was one by Beneducci and Schrock, who argued that interpretation is both critical and unavoidable in quantum mechanics. And so the point being that you really can't do what Hobson's trying to do and say, okay, we don't need any interpretation here. Interpretation is necessary. And if interpretation is necessary as you're talking about quantum mechanics and doing quantum mechanics and describing quantum mechanics, then that means that there's a very practical aspect to this theory that is controversial, and that the interpretational part is intermingled with this practical, the practical aspects of the theory. That brings me to epistemology, because this is unusual, I think, to have this situation, at least in physics. In physics, we usually know what we know and we know what we don't know. We don't have this kind of disagreement about what it is that we have consensus on, or what we should have consensus on. Because we're generally guided by a pretty straightforward principle of inductive reasoning, scientific method, based on primarily inductive reasoning. And so I've laid out here, this is not necessarily comprehensive, but usually if you at least show these four things here, you have a good chance of reaching consensus in scientific circles on a theory. So if you can use that theory to explain past data very consistently and use it to accurately predict future observations, consistently show that those two can be done in objective, repeatable ways, and then especially if you can now combine that with other accepted scientific theories, then we all come to consensus on it. We don't have consensus on scientific theories of dark matter or dark energy or multiverses, as much as we might want to talk about them, alien life, strings, because nothing fits the four criterion for those yet. In fact, I remember going to a talk by Brian Greene, who's a great promoter of string theory and has been for a long time, and he gave a great explanation of string theory and was honest and upfront about the challenges to getting any experimental confirmation of this. And so a colleague who was sitting right beside me at the end of the talk raised his hand and asked, well, why do you call it string theory? Shouldn't it be called string hypothesis? And to his credit, Brian Greene said, yes, this is not at all a theory in this, normal physics sense of the word, scientific sense of the word. It's just a hypothesis. And I've never heard him since use anything but string theory to refer to it, though. But generally, we can, when push comes to shove, we question about something. We say, okay, no, there's not universal acceptance. Brian Greene would never say that is a universally accepted theory. String theory is that way. He knows that is a subject of controversy. But it's interesting that when we get into quantum mechanics, you find that eminent physicists will just argue back and forth and back and forth. No, we do know this. No, we don't know this. Oh, yes, we do know this. So I'm going to bring up some of that. First of all, starting with some things that we can reach a little bit consensus on, and that there has been a lot of practical success using a variety of mathematical methods, and that quantum mechanics has not yet incorporated general relativity to everyone's satisfaction, and we can all pretty much agree on that. And here's just a handful of some of the mathematical formulisms that are out there, mainly for non-relativistic quantum mechanics. And what this, one of the things that's important about this is that there can be a misconception, misunderstanding that there is one set of equations for which you can do everything you need to do in quantum mechanics. And while there has been a lot of work in showing that these formalisms are all self-consistent with each other, we use different types of mathematics to approach different problems. When you want to find your energy eigenstates, you know, you're going to use maybe the Schrodinger formalism and not go into, you definitely not use some of these more complex formulas. I mean, some of them, like the pilot wave formalism, has not even been fully developed. A lot of them seem to have limits in one area and be very useful in another area. You have some that kind of can be extended into relativistic situations and others that cannot. And even in quantum field theories, you have alternative ways of expressing the theory to try to get at different problems. And so it's not like there's one ideal path to go in quantum mechanics to solve all the computational problems. That doesn't mean that there's a contradiction among these different paths, but there's not just one set way. If I've got a problem, okay, I know I'm going to have to go through this calculational method. And that's, I think, important to keep in mind. Also, that there's a consensus that that some of these things that are commonly, views that are commonly held are wrong. So among scientists, we know that certain things that quantum mechanics does not say, and there's myths that abound. Sometimes these myths come out of exaggerations or thought experiments of scientists when there are things that we're saying when we're trying to communicate one thing is kind of misunderstood. So, you know, we might say, oh, there's this probability that if I walk towards a wall, I can just tunnel through to the other side. That doesn't mean that we really have, this theory says that that's going to happen. In fact, it's really more like saying that you have a theory that says you can win the lottery 1,000 times in a row. Well, of course you can, but there's no, that doesn't have any practical importance. And when you do the calculations, it's so ridiculously improbable. And you have to pull up a multiverse to get things like this to happen. And in our universe, it's just not, quantum mechanics says it won't happen. In the same way that thermodynamics says that entropy will always increase. Some other things, I'm running a little short on time, but so I'll go through these quickly, that we can't communicate faster than light, that so far quantum mechanics does not seem to have a direct tie into human consciousness, and maybe it will be shown, but we haven't shown it yet, that quantum mechanics doesn't mean that anything goes. Okay, and then we all agree that there's some debate on metaphysical implications of quantum theory. And I'm going to jump over this real quickly. You can look up those. They're all very fascinating. Because I want to get to some arguments about where there's a lot of controversy about what's known and what's unknown. One of the questions is quantum mechanics about math or is it about physics? And I think that's an important question where you will find a lot of physicists say, we've answered that question. We know. And then others will say, no, we haven't answered that question. And I find this quote by Scott Aronson, he's at MIT, rather intriguing. And he says it's somewhere between math and physics. He calls it it's not a physical theory in the same sense as electromagnetism or general relativity, but it's like an operating system that other physical theories run on as application software. It's not physics in the usual sense. It's not about matter or energy or waves or particles. So he's shifting a little bit towards the math side of that answer to that question. And if you go back to that debate that I showed you earlier, you would see that some of the authors in that debate would probably disagree strongly here. So when we're going to talk about this, can we even categorize it in, you know, correctly in math as math or physics? If we can't do that, that's a real practical problem. I'll just jump, go through these very, very quickly. Questions of whether there's paradox or not, or whether it's completely completely consistent. You will find a lot of literature that claims both of those, which is correct. Is there a deterministic form of quantum mechanics, or must it be non-deterministic? I think when you investigate the literature there, you often find that it kind of depends on what you're restricting yourself to and what your bounds are, and we can come to some agreement that when you're looking at the wave function, you can talk about a deterministic evolution of the wave function. When you're looking at what we observe, there are ways to think about it deterministically, but you have to then say that there are some aspects of the system that we may never never be able to understand completely. The question number four violates locality, causality, or counterfactual definiteness. Sometimes people will insist that quantum mechanics requires violation of locality or causality. And I think this one we can answer for those who are really working on this, I think that it's clear that one of those has to be violated, but not necessarily any one of them. It's locality, causality, or counterfactual definiteness, but not necessarily any one of them has to be violated by quantum the observations we've made so far in quantum mechanics. So that one I think we may be able to come to consensus on, even though we don't always talk about it correctly. Is quantum mechanics time reversible or not? I think there's a lot of disagreement, and that may come down to a question of whether you're talking about practically or fundamentally, because situations like thermodynamics, where you have a possibility of perhaps entropy decreasing, but the odds are so low, we have laws against it; it just doesn't happen. You have we have this idea that what will happen is different than what possibly could happen. But there are some who say, no, there's a fundamental part of quantum mechanics is that you can't operate in a time-reversed way. There are questions of mathematical rigor, like renormalization, and in whether interpretive contexts even matter or not, and whether quantum mechanics can be extended to complex systems. And in terms of mathematical rigor, there are other things that are not as well known as renormalization, things like Hagg's theorem that suggests that there may be problems with the math that we're using, but since it works, we continue to use it anyway. Here's my last slide, except for my references. So how we feel about this is one of the biggest things that's under debate. And that's kind of important as we approach this this theory, that we recognize that our feelings play a big role in as we evaluate what we think we know and what we think we don't know, as well as our particular favorite theories of among all the things that we even agree are controversial.
Because of our late start, we'll keep it pretty short, but we do have time for one or two questions.
How do the quantum realists respond to the concept of isomorphisms? For instance, like your slide where you showed all of the different ways to represent things, I find that in our theories, you pretty much I can't think of a theory that you don't use three or four of them. I mean, the theory that I've worked on recently with a couple of friends is a density matrix method we draw all of our terms in second quantization, and we end up with a variational theory. So, I mean, is the matter a wave or is the matter a finding diagram? I mean, it can't be both, so it has to be a, I mean, that's the way I see it. What is the standard response to
that? The response is that if you use the field approach, and I'm not saying that I completely buy this, but if you use quantum field theory approach of looking at it, this field as a real field, that will take that will be consistent with all the others, and it also represents a real picture of what's going on. And so these other things are oftentimes what's presented is some of these other methods are mathematical tools or tricks. But the real thing that's going on must be a quantum matter field, quantized matter field. And what the people who support that, they believe that you don't run into any contradictions with that. I'm not, or any paradoxes or any barriers to interpretation with that. And I'm not sure that that's true, but that's what they argue.
One more question, and Wayne, could you come up and start setting up here?
Do you think that a lot of these ambiguities or uncertainties might have potential to be resolved once we incorporate relativistic considerations?
Once we incorporate what?
Relativity.
Oh, general relativity. Yeah, I think it's very possible. There's two things that we don't understand well in science at this point that if we were to incorporate them more appropriately into quantum mechanics, quantum field theory might resolve some of these issues. The first being the obvious one is general relativity. The other one, I think, is if we had a better theory of time itself and understanding what time really is, that might answer a lot of these deep fundamental questions posed by quantum mechanics.
Wonderful. Thanks for a great talk.